Good afternoon. I would like to talk to you today a little bit about a needs assessment study that we did of both primary health care providers and mental health providers in Maryland to look at their capacity to treat veterans and their family members for various conditions. And my colleagues are Emily Cook and Lee Leslie, also in the School of Public Health. And we have no conflicts of interest. This study was funded by the state of Maryland. As both Elizabeth and Brian mentioned, of course, OEF and OIF and OND, veterans and their families have experienced a number of unique challenges, the long deployments, exposure to combat, traumatic brain injuries, and their families have suffered along with them through these, through their deployments. Most people think that OEF and OIF veterans are getting most of their care from the VA, but in fact, only about half of them who are eligible are going to the VA for physical and mental health services, but especially mental health services. And we see that there's a shortage now of trained civilian providers. So our study, which was called the Maryland Veterans Resilience Initiative, is a partnership between our University of Maryland School of Public Health and the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. Maryland has really made a major commitment to its veterans. There is a veterans network of care, and they were interested in whether or not the civilian providers were prepared to be handling veterans and their family members. And of course, the VA, for the most part, does not see family members, and so this was important for this group as well. We're home to about 10 different military installations. We have 450,000 veterans, and you can see about 10% of them are 9/11, and that number is growing because we also are home to Walter Reed and the National Intrepid Center of Excellence, so we're seeing a lot of wounded warriors and then their families elect to stay here. So the purpose of this study, again, was to look at a number of issues, their knowledge and practices. By practices, we're looking at whether or not they screen for military status when they see their clients or patients. Do they refer to the VA? How much perceived knowledge do they feel they have? How confident are they in using, especially evidence-based treatments, to care for veterans and family members? And then how much interest do they have in future training? So, we developed an online needs assessment survey that was adapted from one that was developed by VA Vizen 5 and South Carolina University Medical University. Some of you may know Harold Cudler and Dr. Kilpatrick, and they developed the first version of this survey. It took about 15 minutes to complete. It was anonymous, and we sent it out online with an invitation from the Secretary of the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene through the licensed boards of physicians, other physical health providers, and mental health providers. Unfortunately, we were only able to send it out once. The boards don't like to send out these kinds of surveys, and so we were not even able to do a reminder notice. But we did have what we thought was a pretty good response rate, especially because we had to nudge some of the boards to get it out in the first place. So within 2 months, we had over 3,000 completed surveys. And because we were focused on civilian providers, we did exclude responses from active duty service members or those that were working, you know, in a DOD or VA facility. So our final sample, you can see here, was close to 1,700 mental health providers and almost 1,300 physical health providers. So who were they? Well, social workers were the largest number of mental health providers. physical health providers, it was interesting, they were physical and occupational therapists who may have been working with this population. About 35% were physicians, and then we had less nurses. On the mental health side, this represents almost 10% of licensed mental health providers in the state, and it represents probably close to 8% of the physical and occupational therapists, but the numbers drop much lower for physicians and nurses and so forth. They're probably about 3 or 4%. So that is a limitation of the results that I'm going to present. So looking at them, I won't go over everything, but you can see predominantly female, white. They live in urban areas, which is typical of Maryland, even though we have rural areas. You can see that not many have had training or DOD employment, less than about, you know, 1 in 6. And primary care providers were more likely to be TRICARE providers. You know, TRICARE is the health insurance program for active duty service members and their dependents and some retirees. Less than a third of mental health providers were enrolled or were TRICARE providers. The other big difference you can see is that physical health providers were less likely to be 55 or older. So the mental health providers are a little bit older, about half of them 55 or older. So one last thing. I think it's important for you to see how many of them are already treating veterans and service members or their families. So 2/3 of the mental health providers and 3/4 of the physical health providers learned at some point that they were treating a veteran or a veteran family member. Okay, the comments indicated that oftentimes it took maybe 6 months because many veterans won't disclose. So we were very interested in whether or not they screened on their intake. You know, just a simple question, have you or a member of your family ever served in, you know, any branch of the military? And we found that only half of the mental health providers and less than 20% of physical health providers, this is on the civilian side, were screening. And it's amazing that over a third of the mental health providers and 70% almost of physical health providers never screened. And the percentages are fairly similar for the stressors of military service. Okay, then we had a question about referring to the VA. And again, in terms of the data, you can see that overall half of the mental health providers and 2/3 of the physical health providers are never referring to the VA. So, you know, we wondered why, and you can see that there's probably a greater reason is that they don't know how to refer. About 1 in 6 or so, up to 25% of the physical health providers don't have any knowledge of the eligibility, the requirements of referring, less concern about the quality of care. So this suggests that there's an opportunity to increase referrals, which I think are very important. Even if a marriage and family therapist might be seeing a couple about their marital problems, they might want to refer to the VA for a substance abuse program or a traumatic brain injury program and so forth. So that was very interesting to us. Their knowledge of best practice treatments for veterans' conditions was also a major goal of the study. You can see we have about 14 conditions listed here. And overall, less than 40% of the mental health providers and even smaller numbers of the physical health providers believe that they have high knowledge of treating these issues, these war-related issues, in veterans or their family members. It's not surprising that physical health providers wouldn't know quite as much about the behavioral health side, but even on issues like pain management or traumatic brain injury, you can see that, you know, 20% or less feel like they have a high level of knowledge of these conditions. And the, I guess I'll go to this. We did logistic regressions for each of the 14 conditions to see whether or not any demographic factors or military background factors predicted greater knowledge. And there's not time to show all of them, but if you look at significant predictors of at least five of the conditions, among the mental health providers, especially VA DOD training or employment or recent treatment of military clients, made those individuals that had that kind of training or employment were 3 to 5 times more likely to report having high knowledge of the condition. So that really did matter. For both groups, age was a significant predictor of more knowledge, perhaps because these clinical providers have treated veterans of other war eras, male for mental health conditions, maybe because the military is more male-dominated, I'm not sure why. It was interesting that veteran status predicted greater knowledge of physical health knowledge, but not mental health knowledge. And in talking to a number of these providers, it was because, or we thought it was because, many of the primary care providers had actually served as medics or in emergency care in the service, whereas the mental health providers were coming back to school afterwards, and just like everyone else, would need training and clinical supervision to deliver this care. The confidence to treat pretty much mirrors the knowledge data, so those who are more knowledgeable about a particular condition have more confidence to treat. And this was the good news, was that there was a great deal of interest in training on these 14 conditions on both sides. The mental health providers preferred face-to-face trainings, about 80 to 40%. The physical health care providers, about 50 to 40% preferring face-to-face trainings. Okay, so what about the implications of practice? Well, it was important for us to use this data to provide trainings for both groups of clinicians, and to date, we have been holding trainings on both military culture, but also these various conditions. Most of the trainings are done by people at the Center for Deployment Psychology or Walter Reed, specialists in these particular issues. And we've already trained in less than a year 700 providers at 4 different sites. We just finished a 2-day training on prolonged exposure therapy for PTSD, which you know is an evidence-based treatment. And the Center for Deployment Psychology is going to supervise those clinicians who choose to use this treatment. We are planning future trainings for primary care providers and one on women veterans health. We've been both interviewing health experts on women's health and holding focus groups with women veterans, so this will be a big training. All of the trainings have had wait lists. There is significant interest in obtaining this kind of training, and we are able to offer it for CEUs or CMEs, you know, up to 13 CEUs at costs of like $25 to $50, so it's very reasonable with the subsidy from the state, and, you know, we want to encourage other states to kind of follow our lead. So to our knowledge, this is the first statewide assessment of civilian primary care and mental health providers about their needs. We know that these individuals, these specialists are going to, or these providers are going to increasingly see veterans and their family members in their practices, and they need and they want targeted trainings on these conditions. So again, I encourage, you know, any of you to approach your states about getting funding to do this type of training. I think we're very fortunate to be, you know, close to Washington, D.C. and have experts, but there are VAs around the country, and so there are people that can provide training for these kinds of continuing education programs. All of them have significantly increased their knowledge and their perceived sense of readiness to treat these various conditions. You know, obviously some are at the basic level where you're introducing military culture, information about the various conditions, but others, like the prolonged exposure therapy training, offer an opportunity for advanced work. I know all of us believe that veterans and their families have made major sacrifices for our nation, and they really deserve the highest standard of care. So, that's it. Thank you.